Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Story time.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I visited Yellowstone National Park last week and decided to take our boat out on Yellowstone Lake yesterday. This was our last day, and we wanted to end our trip on a high note. While we were loading our boat into the launch pad, there were fishermen from Wisconsin catching trout, cutting them up, and then throwing them back into the lake. This is a government job, aka an angler incentive program to manage the fisheries. One could tell how experienced these men were and how knowledgeable they were about the lakes just by talking to them and watching them work in rhythm, as they probably had for several years. Basically, these guys know their stuff. So, a couple of the older, bigger guys were kind enough to help us get our boat in. We are new to using this boat. The guys told us to be careful. The water has big swells and it's getting windy. In a side conversation, an angler told my dad about the bodies still lost in the lake and never recovered, including a couple of park rangers. The angler explained that the water is too cold and within 20 minutes, hypothermia has set in. So again, he cautioned us, and we headed out anyway. We didn't make it far, 3 to 5 foot swells pushed us back in. It was almost as if the angler was expecting our short return, and he helped us guide the boat back into the dock onto the boat trailer. He just smiled and said, "I'm glad you're back. It's bad weather out there. I felt I had to give you the background so you could see why I am so curious about these missing people, bodies in the lake, and park ranger bodies all believed to be at the bottom of Yellowstone Lake. However, I cannot find any information on these missing people and missing rangers. I asked other park employees and researched the National Park website. Nothing. What are your thoughts? Does anyone know about missing people and missing park rangers at Yellowstone Lake?" A park ranger discovered me and my friends in a clearing in the middle of the woods, having a competition using unicycles to see if any of us could jump rope while being on a unicycle. The man looked very confused and asked if we were doing anything besides this. We said no, we were just bored. Then he just said, "You know you can fish, right?" We replied, "We already did that," and he just kind of walked away, a little disappointed, I think. Honestly, I believe we were probably the weirdest thing he encountered that day. Maybe he was looking for somebody and found us, who knows? I have worked many different jobs in my lifetime, starting as a janitor. I worked on a farm for about 2 years at one point, later as a PE teacher in a high school. I was even an officer before eventually moving to New Jersey and getting a job as a park ranger in the Pine Barrens. I moved to New Jersey to be closer to my family. The job didn't seem hard. I worked 4 days a week and spent all my time in the park, with the other 3 days off. However, I haven't worked for the park for a very long time, and I'm about to tell you why. I think I lasted a year, and maybe even less than that. I had a series of very strange things happen to me there, and the final straw made me quit my job as soon as I got the chance. I began working at Pine Barrens in April of that year. I was introduced to the job and the park by the park services. The place is humongous, stretching over an area that is 22% of New Jersey. My job was to patrol a certain area and make sure everything was in order. If you've ever visited the Pine Barrens, you would know that abandoned buildings and towns are scattered throughout the park. I would clock in on a Tuesday, work through to Friday, and then Saturday through Monday. The first couple of weeks went smoothly as I got familiar with the woods and my route. However, in the third week, on a Thursday evening, my first spooky experience happened. The park was buzzing with nature sounds, and there were no people around that day. Although sometimes kids like to wander the park at night, looking for ghosts or just a secluded place to hang out, I had not seen any of them either. I was taking mental notes of my surroundings when I noticed a humming and buzzing sound. I couldn't tell where it was coming from at first, but it was getting closer. That's when I looked up and saw three bright lights moving in a circle, almost as if they were spiraling down towards me. Instinctively, I ducked and ran as fast as I could. I probably ran for a couple of hundred feet before turning around to see if the lights were still there, but they were not. The humming had also stopped. I dropped to the ground, trying to gather my composure and catch my breath, and also make sense of what had happened 5 minutes prior. I do believe in aliens, even though I had never had an encounter before. I had no clue what else that could have been, so I kind of agreed with myself that those were aliens, and I wouldn't think about it anymore. My second experience happened about 5 months after I began working in the park. It was around 7 p.m., and the sun was getting very low in the sky since it was October. As I was going on my regular route, I noticed something lurking behind the trees about 100 yards away from me. At first, it looked like a person, maybe a man about 5'7". I thought it might have been some college kid playing a prank to scare me. I yelled out that nobody is allowed to be in the woods at this time of year, but he didn't move. It was only after I shouted for the third time that he finally moved in front of the tree, and that's when I could take a good look at him. When I saw him, I nearly had a heart attack. He was dressed in dirty, torn up clothing, but the most disturbing thing about him was his head, or lack of one. I looked at him, not knowing if I should ask what happened to him or just bolt out of there as fast as I could. I froze for a solid 3 minutes, even though I noticed he had begun moving closer to me. He started running up to me, and as he was getting closer, I realized he was also translucent. This was a poltergeist. Now, when it comes to aliens, I'm a believer, but when it comes to ghosts, I was very skeptical. After that second incident, I decided that as much as I loved being a ranger and working in nature, staying there was not worth it. This hot mess of a place was not worth me risking my sanity for. I called in the next day and explained the situation. They told me that something like this had already happened to their previous rangers. They tried to convince me to stay on the job longer and doubled my pay, but I refused. I would not risk losing my mind for this job. I'm having a hard time remembering the stories told to me by my Navajo family, but when I Skype with them again, I will ask for me this creepy set of events happened directly to me though, so here goes my first personal encounter. I know it's lengthy, but hey, skinwalkers, they do require a backstory. It started when my two brothers, who we will call David and Luke, and Luke's girlfriend, who we will call Sarah, all drove down to the desert to spend some time out in the country. This is reservation land, as it were, so red dirt was everywhere. This was in southern Utah, a majestically beautiful place if you ever get the chance to visit. We had some pistols and decided to go out and target practice. We took our gear and some old targets to a place called Devil's Heartbeat. I had never been, but all three of them were familiar with the area. It was a canyon about 200 or so feet deep. We stayed on one end of the canyon by the drop-offs, and to our left was the ravine, about 50 feet over. The opposite side of the canyon rose up above us where some other ruins were. The Navajo may disagree with historians on the Anasazi. The ridge Enon departure, according to Navajo legend, they simply disappeared from existence, leaving behind plates, dishes, food, and went into another dimension or some equivalent. But whatever the history, the Navajo do not like to wander in the. I never asked why, but figured it had something to do with disrespect, preserving history, etc. As such, none of the others cared a bit about these canyon ruins. They were more interested in shooting pistols. I could see old beds, ladders, and even cave drawings on the cliffs with just my naked eye, and I got this strange fixation on going over there. I'm not Navajo and felt that their rules didn't apply to me. I set down the cliffs without a rope and decided I would climb down, cross the canyon floor, and then climb back up. This was a bad idea for a million reasons, but it was just like some obsession. I can't explain the feeling. It was the magnetism. I wanted to be in those ruins, and it wasn't just a touristy curiosity. It felt like I was meant to go there. I kept slipping and kept getting stuck on the rocks. I was so frustrated, I almost started crying. Finally, I was deterred by the unmistakable sound of a growl coming from the canyon floor below me. There were trees down there, so I couldn't see what was making the growl, but a mountain lion immediately rose to my mind, and I got my ass back up to the cliffside. I said nothing to the others, and we shot guns for a while. The only other strange occurrence was while Sarah was aiming, things got eerily quiet. We all heard a sound from behind us, maybe 20 feet away. It was almost a growl, but then a horse laughs, almost like a lion, and then a hyena. We had a clear view of the entire area, and there was nothing, certainly not on the clifftops where we had heard it. Anyway, the creepy part was that while David, Sarah, and I all heard it from a close distance, Luke heard the exact same noise right by his ear. We ended up camping out there to see if anything would happen, and this is when I got completely terrified. Before, I was only scared of wild animals. We had guns, though, and were sleeping with no bags or tents, just some blankets under the stars and a little flare, so I felt safe. When we all laid down, I fell asleep pretty quickly, but woke up a few hours later to see everyone else lying with their eyes wide open, listening. The canyon was completely full of noise. The only way to describe it is people banging rocks together. There would be one set maybe 300 yards away, then another clacking 200 yards away, and then 50 yards away. The canyon echoes, so it was hard to tell exactly how many rock smacking noises there were going on, but they sounded like Morse code. We listened to this for maybe 10 minutes, no other animal noises, nothing. Finally, David, who is kind of a hard ass and the least superstitious, shouted, "Shut up!" And everything immediately stopped. My heart was in my throat. We just sat there and stared at one another wide-eyed. It was dead quiet, and then we heard another super weird noise from the ruins. I don't know how to explain this one either, but it kind of sounded like a zebra noise, like these squeaky trills. It got louder, and then the rocks, sticks, whatever they were, started up again. But this was worse because now other animal noises came. We heard what sounded like wolves or coyotes barking, monkeys screeching. In my opinion, those were the most terrifying, owls hooting, and through it all, the terrible zebra noises. We said nope and got our happy little asses out of there immediately. It took us maybe 10 minutes to douse that fire, pack our blankets, and speed away. And the noises were continuing the entire time. That night, I was obviously pretty shaken up. Before I could fall asleep again, my Navajo mother came and sat by me and said that she could tell I had a rough day. We hadn't mentioned the creepy stuff to avoid a lecture about messing with spirits. She asked me about it, and I ended up spilling my guts about not seeing that canyon ruins. It was something personal that felt like it. I wanted to go there, so why couldn't I? It would have been beautiful. After I told her all about it, I could see that she had a really concerned look on her face. "What is it?" I asked, totally confused. And she explained something I had no idea about. The spirits and the ruins like to lure people up. When they get up on the ground, the spirits push them off. That's why we don't go there. I remained creeped out for the remainder of the visit. The town has a public access kiva, kind of a tourist trap for a little potent place, but since I didn't see the ruins up close, I went down into the kiva, and I went alone as, of course, my superstitious family refused to enter other natives' dwellings. I figured that nothing could push me off a cliff if I was in a kiva. I was right, but something even worse happened. Fast forward to a few weeks later. I worked a shitty call center in Salt Lake City, third shift. It was my first night alone, and I was feeling jumpy ever since the kiva. My brothers already warned me that I had a skinwalker following me, but of course, I didn't believe it. I don't smoke, but I followed my coworkers out for smoke breaks because I'm talkative and I like to chat. Tonight, I lurked in the doorway because I had this horrible cloud of dread hanging over me. I was peeping out the glass door and being a total weirdo. It hit me then how paranoid I had been. That's what skinwalkers do, they mess with your mind. While I was pacing on the front of the glass doors, I decided that this whole thing was stupid, and I was going to go outside and stand there for the rest of my 10-minute break. Most of the smokers were already filing back in, but I walked out and put my hands in my pockets, looked at the sky, looked at the building, mentally patting myself on the back for not being a coward. Then I saw something that I will never be able to give a rational or even halfway accountable explanation for. We have like 6 parking lots. In one of the lots far away from me, maybe 100 feet, I could see something walking. It was a dog, obviously, but it was almost limping and walked like it was tired or hurt. Animal lover me forgot all about skinwalkers, and I started walking toward it, making those come here, doggy noises, and then I stopped abruptly. The dog had the body form of a greyhound, and it was gray, but there was something very, very wrong with it. It had bloody legs and limped, but it walked more like a person would on feet and hands. Its butt was moving to and from, if that makes any sense. When it heard me, it just stopped without turning, something I've never known any dog to do, and finally, it looked over its shoulder at me. And this is the freaky part, this dog was looking at me the way a person does. It had huge eyes, way too big for a greyhound, and its teeth were bared like it was considering biting me. Then it growled, but it was like a whistle growl noises no regular animals make. It almost sounded like it wanted to talk to me or was taunting me somehow. In the middle of all this, I realized that it didn't have a tail, and I'd heard from all the Navajo stories that skinwalkers, when they appear as animals, don't have tails. Forgetting all logic and rationale, I turned and jetted. I didn't look back until I was back inside the building and had pulled the door shut behind me. And by then, when I looked, of course, the thing was gone. When I described this to my brothers, they were absolutely sure it was a skinwalker, and they went through the trouble of blessing me, my apartment, and their apartments. I never saw the creepy bloody dog again, and I have never even slightly wanted to visit the cliff ruins. I've been seeing what I call werewolves pretty much since I've been little, and I've had encounters with them ever since then too. Nothing really ever happens with them. We just look at each other, and they end up going about their business. But I did have one terrible encounter, and it was the most horrible and terrifying thing that I've ever encountered. It was when I was truck driving in Ohio. I still have nightmares about it, actually. I parked my shipper receiver one night. I dropped my trailer I'd been pulling because it takes a while for them to unload and load my trailer. I got there the evening before I was supposed to be there. I dropped the trailer and pulled out from under it and parked away from it, just on the other side of this dirt parking lot. This place is kind of near the woods, and not many people live around here. There's actually a lot of woods around it. I pulled my front curtains in my cab and left my truck running and cooked some food for me and my pit bull. He always comes with me, he's my baby boy. After we ate, it was getting dark, and I took him for a walk before we'd settle in for the night. That's when I would go play some Modern Warfare with my squad. My boy was acting kind of weird, though, looking all around and sniffing, not really like him at all. It was like he was in serious protective mode when we were walking around those woods. It was way too quiet where we were too, no bugs, nothing making any kind of noise. He finally settled down, and we went back to my truck, and I got on my Xbox. A few hours later, he starts acting very protective again and starts growling at the side of the truck where I was sitting, which would be the passenger side. I just thought I made him mad or something, so I started loving on him, but he wouldn't stop growling and staring at that side of the truck. So I decided to take off my headset and listen, and that's when I could hear the unmistakable sound of something outside walking around by me. It sounded big and it sounded really close to the area of the truck that I was in. Then out of nowhere, I heard this deep guttural growl. It sounded off right next to the door, and then the truck rocked back and forth. Our trucks are heavy, and it takes a lot to rock the truck side to side, but this thing rocked my truck nonetheless. I'm gonna admit I started to freak out a little bit. My boy jumped into my lap to protect me. I mean, his hair was up, he was growling. He scared the hell out of me, he's never done that before. It was a very serious, tense moment, but it was also a huge comfort to know that he was so protective over me. I finally got up because something told me to just check my doors. I needed to make sure they were locked, so I started with the passenger side since that's where I was at. I pulled the curtain back to take a peek, and I looked down at the side of my cab. I still regret looking down there to this day. There was this huge, bulky, tall werewolf, and it had these glowing red eyes. I'll never forget the way it looked when it was beside the truck. It was around 8 feet tall and had a very muscular body like a bodybuilder. It had long hairy arms with human-like hands and these razor-sharp claws at the end of them. If you've ever seen the movie Bad Moon, it looked almost exactly like that, but it had very dark brown or black hair instead of gray, and it had those red eyes that just seemed to glow in the night. And just looking into them, you could tell that it wanted to harm me. It was something that I want to forget. It's something that I wish I could still forget, and I wish I never would have seen. I mean, I was frozen in place by looking into his eyes and so damn scared down to my very soul. Like I said, I've been seeing creatures like this in my whole life, but none like this. This one was different than the rest. This one was evil and it was dangerous, and I really think it wanted to kill me. I knew that I might lose my life that night. My dog attacked the side of the truck, and it seemed to snap me out of my fear. My mind was racing billions of thoughts a second, I really couldn't focus. But I went to look back and realized that my door was not locked and the curtain was still open, and it looked like this thing was reaching for the damn handle. I freaked out and slammed the door lock button. It locked, and about the same time, this creature started pulling the handle, and it wouldn't open, thank God. When it realized the door was locked, it seemed to piss it off. I mean, seriously pissed this thing off. It let out this awful howl that was so loud and terrible that I could feel it vibrating inside of my bones. It freaked me out even more, and I was laying down on the floor, crying and praying for my life. Then my guardian angel, my dog, my boy, he's down on the floor nudging me, licking me, whining, telling me that it's okay, that he was scared too, and we just needed to get the hell out of there. I came back to my senses. I jumped in the driver's seat and ripped down the curtains. I slammed the stick shift into gear and tried to get away, but I forgot I had the parking brake on. I slammed it in and started to drive off. I finally hit the road and then turned onto the main street and almost wrecked because I was going way too fast. From where we were, there was this field that was about the size of a football field. That was from the warehouse to the road. I looked through the field, and from there where we were, I saw that werewolf still standing there, and then he took off running on his back two legs, and within just a few seconds, he was right there almost to the road. He ran with his arms stretched out and his very big teeth showing like he was smiling and chasing his prey. About that time, he leapt towards the truck. Now I'm doing at least 45 to 50 miles per hour, and it looked like he was about to jump right on the truck, but he missed it and he hit the other side of the road. Instantly though, it jumped back on two legs and back under the road and chased me for about another 10 seconds or so, and then it just stopped. I never stopped though, I just kept going, speeding down the road until I could get the truck about 30 miles away. When I got there, I found a place to park and jumped in the back. My mind wouldn't rest though, it was trying to tell me that this was not real and that it didn't just happen. But it did just happen, and it was real. I just grabbed my dog and snuggled up with him the rest of the night. I managed to fall asleep, but all I could think about and dream about was that werewolf and that it might have been my last night alive. I kept this a secret from everyone, including my mom and my wife, for a very long time, and when I finally told them, it was like this weight had been lifted. They both cried because they knew that very well might have been my last night alive, and they were definitely happy that it wasn't. So be careful out there in this world. These creatures are out there, some mean you harm and some don't. Just don't ever go looking for them, and if you do cross paths with them, just be careful, really, really careful, and always be on the Lord. I know so many people may doubt the story, but it's my true story. Believe it or not, it doesn't matter to me, I just want you guys out there to always stay safe and alert. Few years ago, during the middle of the night, five convicts all serving life sentences escaped Westbrook Penitentiary in Nova Scotia, Canada. Michael Smith, age 27, Jake Thompson, age 32, Sam Johnson, age 36, George Miller, age 29, and Lawrence Rogers, aged 41, made their daring escape. While making their escape, they stumbled upon an abandoned farm, or so they thought, 20 kilometers away from the penitentiary. 2 days later, two of the convicts told the warden the gruesome details of what happened to them at that farm. This is a story as told by one of the convicts, Michael Smith. I and the boys had been planning our escape for months. Our plan was to make it down to the United States if we could, where no one would know who we are. We knew we had to get as far away from here as possible. We made our escape in the middle of the night, about 2 a.m., I think. Once making it past the walls, we started running north and planned to turn west once we made it past the Memramcook River. I'm not sure how far we ran or for how long, but the sun was rising as a farm came into view. We were tired, hungry, and thirsty and figured we'd run far enough away that we could take a break for a while. When we got close to the farm, I could see it looked old and decaying, like it hadn't been used in years. The house looked dirty, and the bushes surrounding it were overgrown. The barn looked like it was going to crumble in on itself. We weren't sure if anyone still lived there, so we approached the house slowly and carefully. As we got within a few meters of the house, we decided three of us would go to the back door in case people in the house decided to try and run out the back, and the other two would knock on the front door to see if anyone was home. If there were people there, our plan was to tie them up so we could get something to eat and drink before we continued running. I went to the back door with two of the other boys and stood there waiting to see if anyone came running out the door. A few minutes went by when the door suddenly opened, and it was Jake. He said there was no one in the house, so the rest of us went inside so we could start looking for some food and something to drink. The inside of the house was as bad as the outside. It was filthy and smelled musty. It looked like some wild animals had been living there for some time. We hunted around for some food, and all we could find were several cans of meat and beans. The faucet inside the house didn't work, so Jake told Sam to go outside to see if there was a well nearby. 10 minutes went by before we heard Sam yelling, "Get out here now!" We all took off running out the back door. Once outside, we heard Sam again, "I'm in the barn, get in here now." As we ran towards the barn, we could see the barn doors were slightly open. Before going inside, we paused for a moment, looking at each other, not knowing what to expect. We were already jittery and on edge. I was the first one inside the barn, which was somewhat dark. As I stepped inside and my eyes adjusted to the darkness, I could see Sam in front of me with a strange look on his face. I then happened to notice out of the corner of my eye what appeared to be a man a couple of meters away from Sam. I looked over to his direction and could see it was, in fact, a man. He was standing there staring at me. He had long silver hair that went past his shoulders and looked to be about 60 years of age. As the rest of the boys came in behind me, they stopped dead in their tracks as well when they saw the man. We stood there looking at both Sam and the man for a bit before Jake spoke up and asked, "Who are you, old man? Do you live here?" The man didn't answer, he just continued staring at me without uttering a word. A minute went by before Jake again asked the man who he was and if he lived there, this time more sternly. Another minute went by before the old man slowly turned his head so he was now looking at Jake and responded in a calm, confident voice, "I do live here and have for a long time." I noticed the old man had a slight accent that I couldn't quite place at the moment. Jake then said, "Sam, George, grab that chair over there and find some rope to tie up the old man." They both knew Jake's temper well, so they wasted no time in grabbing a chair that was nearby and finding some baling twine. As they grabbed and tied the old man to the chair, he didn't fight back or say anything. He continued staring at Jake with an expressionless look on his face. It was an ache that went through me, something was not right about this man. I thought back to my childhood, remembering how my father was, and spotting evil had become second nature to me. I kept my thoughts to myself, though, showing weakness in front of the boys was not something I was going to do. Jake then instructed Sam to go grab the canned food we'd found in the house and asked him if he'd found a well with water in it, to which Sam replied he had. As Sam left, Jake turned his gaze towards the old man and asked, "What's your story, old man? How do you live in a hellhole like this?" The old man didn't respond at first, he just sat there glaring at Jake. When he finally spoke, he said, "Let me tell you gentlemen a story, since it looks like I might be here for a spell. I was born a very long time ago in a small village in France. When I was a young man, about your age, something terrible happened to me. It has led me to be unable to die since. I no longer fear death, I long for it. Each day that passes is one more day I must remain on this godforsaken earth. Judging by your tired gentleman, I can see where you came from. I do not care what your business is or what plans you have, I only ask you leave before nightfall." Right then, Sam startled as he walked in with the canned food and a bucket of water. We all jumped a little, and Jake made light of the situation, saying, "Crazy old man, Sam, bring me the food and water." What the old man said and the way he said it frightened me. This was not the way a crazy person talks or behaves. I looked over at the old man, who then lowered his head and was quiet. We then went and sat down in an area of the barn that was light enough for us to see when we ate. As we sat, we passed around the cans of food, sharing what little we had. The rest of the boys made lighthearted conversation about what their plans were when we made it to America, but I couldn't shake the unnerving feeling this old man was dangerous. After we finished eating, Jake said, "Someone needs to go take first watch on the loft. The area surrounding us is wide open for several kilometers, so it would be best to travel by night so we don't get spotted." We crossed several rivers on the way here and went upstream a ways before going back on land, so it should take the dogs a while to find our scent. George then said he'd take first watch as the rest of us went to different parts of the barn to try and get comfortable so we could get some sleep. The next thing I remember was being awakened by Lawrence shaking me, saying it was my turn to watch, as he had just finished, which meant I'd been asleep for several hours. As I made my way to the loft, I looked over at the old man. He was glaring at me again with an expressionless look on his face. He didn't seem to be at all worried that five escaped convicts had tied him to a chair with no idea of what could happen next. When I made it to the loft and looked outside through one of the windows, I could see it was getting to be late afternoon, which meant we'd be leaving in a few hours. I wondered what Jake had in mind for the old man before we left. I sat down on a barrel the other boys had been using to watch from and drifted off into my thoughts when suddenly I startled myself awake, as I'd fallen asleep. I jumped off the barrel and noticed it was almost dusk. I hurried down the ladder to see if the boys were still asleep, which they had to be, otherwise, they'd have woken me up by now for sure. As I got down off the ladder and looked in the old man's direction, I couldn't believe what I saw. He was just gone. I ran over to the chair to check and could see the baling twine we'd used to tie him up was ripped to shreds lying on the ground. I yelled to the boys to wake up and come quick. Within seconds, they all came running over to my side and were as unnerved as I was. Lawrence and George had tied him up well, and he didn't look strong enough to rip through the baling twine. The barn was quickly getting dark inside, so I asked Jake what we should do now, when suddenly we heard a noise coming from one of the rooms in the back of the barn. Lawrence spoke up and said, "Jake, let's get out of here. It's hard to see and hear, and we need to leave anyway. I'm not leaving without giving the old man a proper goodbye, if you know what I mean. He knows we're escaped convicts, that's got to be him back there in one of those rooms. If you guys are too scared to go back there to get him with me, then just wait here," said Jake. "Fine, but hurry the hell up," I responded. Jake started slowly walking to the back of the barn. There were at least three rooms in the back and several stables. Jake always acted like a tough guy, but deep down, I thought he was a coward. The four of us watched as Jake disappeared into the darkness. It was getting hard to see in the barn, except for a sliver of moonlight from the rising moon that was starting to come down through the cracks in the old wood. At that point, I was sweating and shaking so badly with fear I thought I might pass out, when suddenly, I heard something let out a growl as Jake screamed out, "You son of a—" Then he was cut off. The four of us wasted no time in moving to get the hell out of there. We turned and ran towards the barn doors, which were a few meters behind us. When we hit the doors and tried pushing them open, they wouldn't open. We fumbled around for a bit trying to figure out why we couldn't open the doors when we found out why. Someone had put a chain through the doors with a padlock on it, locking us in. "Oh hell, what are we going to do now?" asked George. "Find a way out, come on, we need to get out of here now. Let's see if we can find somewhere we can squeeze through," I responded. We started feeling our way along the barn wall, trying to see if we could find an opening, when I heard what sounded like another growl, then something on four legs running fast towards us. I shouted out, "What is that?" Suddenly, and without warning, Lawrence let out a blood-curdling scream and cried out, "Help, something's got me." He continued screaming when suddenly it was as if something ripped out his throat, and the screaming immediately stopped. George then yelled, "Come on, Johnny, let's get the hell out of here now." I didn't say anything, I just started to run away from Lawrence's screams as fast as I could. As I ran through that dark barn, I kept running into things, almost knocking myself out several times. When I came to what I thought was the back of the barn, I turned around and stood there, trying to catch my breath. As I stood there, I noticed it was dead silent, nothing was moving or making noise. It was as if the world had come to a halt. A few minutes went by when I heard someone whisper, "Johnny, is that you?" "It's me, Jake, I think I found a way out of here, come here." I immediately stiffened up and froze. I thought to myself, I heard Jake scream something awful, could he still be alive? Then again, I heard someone whispering from the dark, "Come on, Johnny, get over here." I wasn't sure what to do, but I knew I didn't want to stand there waiting to be next. I slowly started creeping towards the sound of Jake's voice, when I heard Lawrence's blood-curdling screams coming from the loft area. I started moving faster towards Jake's voice, when suddenly I stumbled upon something lying on the floor. It made a grunting sound, which made me jump back. "Johnny, it's me, Jake, help me up." I reached down to help Jake up when my hand touched a pool of warm liquid on the ground. I put my hand up to my nose and could smell the distinct smell of blood. I fumbled around a bit more until I found Jake's arm and helped him up off the barn floor. It was then I noticed the light from the moon coming in, and could see the way out Jake had said he'd found. We hurried as fast as we could. Jake was torn up badly and bleeding. When we got to the hole the light was coming through, I pushed on the barn's paneling, and it opened up just enough that we could fit through. Once outside, we started heading back the way we'd come. I couldn't stop looking over my shoulder as I helped Jake along, thinking we were for sure next. We continued walking all night to try and get as far away from the farm as possible. When it got light enough, we found a busy road to try and get some help. It didn't take long for people to figure out we were escaped convicts, and then we were picked up by the police. I thought Jake was going to die sometime during the night, but the tough bastard held on. After Michael Smith told his story to the warden informed the local police, who then went to investigate the farm. When they went inside the barn, several of the officers mentioned that it smelled like an animal's den. While searching the barn, they found the old man on the loft, sitting in a chair reading a book. When asked who he was, his response was calm and collected, "What took you so long?" He was placed under arrest for the suspected murders of Sam Johnson, George Miller, and Lawrence Rogers. As the search in the barn continued, they found a hidden room under one of the rooms, containing the bones of several dozen people, including Sam and Lawrence. The bones had been picked clean, except for some fairly fresh tissue that still covered them. Over the next month, a thorough search of the entire premises was conducted. There was never an exact count of how many bodies they found, but they suspected as many as 100 different bodies may have been discovered on the farm. Unfortunately, George's body or bones were never recovered. The authorities also searched the house, finding many old items dating back to the 1700s, including an old photograph that matched the old man. Experts determined that the photograph dated back to the 1850s and was taken in France. However, no one could ascertain how or when the old man came to live on the farm, as it had been abandoned for 30 years. The old man was sentenced to prison, where he remained until 1984. Then, one summer day in 1984, he vanished from his cell. A search was organized, but he was never found. In the years that followed, another family purchased the land where the farm was located. They reported sightings of a strange older man walking around the outskirts of the farm, sometimes just standing there staring before disappearing back into the trees. The old man never gave his name to the authorities, so his nickname became the Old Man. When the warden asked the old man if the story Michael Smith told was true, the old man simply replied, "I don't deny it." As for Michael's fellow escapee, Jake, he survived his injuries but needed to have his left arm amputated due to the severe damage it suffered. His account corroborated with Michael's story. When the warden asked Michael what he thought killed the other men, Michael's response was hauntingly simple, "A werewolf." The case of the old man and the mysterious farm remains one of the eerie and unexplained incidents in local folklore, leaving many questions unanswered and shrouded in mystery. Not a horror story as such, but just a really weird situation. I'm in Australia, so this is a Gumtree, aka our version of Craigslist, story. A few months back I get a phone call from a random older man, who is clearly very drunk, and he's asking for me by name, full name, and talking about how his mom had bought something off me probably 10 years ago. It was creepy because he's telling me about where I live and telling me how I looked then, that he had driven his mom to my place to pick up whatever the heck it was that I had sold. I have absolutely no recollection of it. I didn't hang up because I was so off put by this random person saying this stuff, and it was just so weird. He must have realized that he was creeping me out a bit, and he apologized, and that's when he's explained that his mom had passed away and he's going through her address book and came across my name and number, and it reminded him of the times he used to take her places. I have bought a lot, sold some, on Gumtree over the years and have never felt worried about going to someone's home or having someone come here. Until this phone call. But when he finally put some context into the call, it eased my mind. It was just an older bloke grieving for his mom. Actual Craigslist horror story. I was 19 years old at the time, needing a roommate as my ex had just moved out. I posted an ad on Craigslist and received a reply within a day. Desperate to make rent, I invited the guy over to check out the house. The next day, he showed up with his dad, and everything seemed fine. He liked my Star Wars action figure collection, and his dad mentioned he would be paying rent because Rick, 25 years old, was going to be in college. I thought, great. I don't have to worry about this college kid missing rent. So, I drew up a sublet contract and emailed it to them. About a week later, he moved his bed and dresser in, and his dad made the first rent payment on time. Everything seemed well initially. However, over the course of a few months, things started to take a bizarre turn. In the second month, rent came due, and the dad was late, claiming I didn't inform him it was needed by the second, even though it was in the contract. I ended up paying out of my pocket. Meanwhile, Rick began complimenting me on my appearance daily, only to follow it up with, "I'm not gay though." He had a girlfriend who lived on the other side of the country. One day, after I took a shower, I found evidence of his activities in the form of cum on the shower floor. When I confronted him, he claimed, "I don't masturbate, I have a girlfriend." It was bewildering. In the third month, rent was late again, with the same excuse from the dad. I showed him last month's texts, but he got indignant and didn't reply. Once again, I paid out of my pocket, and he paid on the sixth. I warned him that if it happened again, we'd have to discuss Rick moving out. Rick got a job at a pizza place down the street, seemingly avoiding attending any classes. His truck was constantly filled with old coffee makers, and he inexplicably practiced parkour, leaving shoe marks on the walls. Arguments erupted about small matters, such as him neglecting chores. I discovered he had been playing with my Star Wars collectibles in his room. His girlfriend visited, leaving her dog behind. The bathroom and my clippers were adorned with his pubic hair, creating an unpleasant situation. In the fourth month, predictably, the dad was late with rent again. I insisted that Rick move out, but the dad claimed I would have to take him to court first. Rick increasingly used my PlayStation and TV, leading to me placing a child lock on it. When he discovered this, he wanted to physically fight me over it, but I refrained. A few days later, I found a letter from his probation officer on the coffee table. I paid for a background check and learned he had prior convictions for aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. I called his dad, insisting he leave the next day. The dad laughed it off, so I mentioned having Rick's probation officer's number and the recent threat of physical violence. When I returned home from work that day, Rick and his belongings were gone, leaving what he owed for rent that month. Despite the tumult, the dog he left behind turned out to be a sweetheart. Nevertheless, the experience taught me a valuable lesson. Never get a roommate on Craigslist. Our house was for sale and suddenly appeared on Craigslist for rent by an unknown person. We had people showing up at random hours, asking to see the house, and driving by. They would then call our realtor, wanting to know rental information. It turns out it was a ring of people who would pretend to rent property and take their money. When people showed up to move in, they discovered that what they thought was their new home was already lived in. We had to file a police report and post signs on our doors, notifying people that our home was for sale and the rental listing was a scam. Hi everyone. I have been reading this thread for a while and finally decided to post. This occurred in September of 2007 when I was a sophomore at a Washington DC university. We were coming back to school for the fall, and I had just moved into my dorm. I met a neighbor named Trish and her dad, who was helping her move in. As a super broke student at a very elite private university, I realized that I was missing a few essentials for my room and decided to check Craigslist for free or cheap items. While scrolling, I noticed someone offering free haircuts. Glancing back in the mirror, I immediately thought, "Damn, I need a haircut." I messaged the post, and they got back to me super quickly, within minutes. The person explained that they needed to style models for their school portfolio and asked me to meet at a hotel later that day. Excitedly, I shared this find with my friend Trish. However, her face fell, and she said, "No way can you do this. You don't know this person. If they are really looking for models, why can't they come here, etc." I agreed, realizing she was right. At that moment, Trish's dad walked in, and after being briefed on the situation, he said, "I know you're not my kid, but if you were, I would never let you go see this guy." Taken aback by their concern, I sullenly agreed not to go to the appointment. When I went to show them the posting, it was gone. Looking back, I can't believe my lack of common sense. Clearly, this post targeted women who don't have much, and maybe those women's disappearances would go unnoticed for a while. I was definitely looking to get myself a free haircut, but Trish and her dad saved me. It gives me chills to think what could have happened if I had gone. So, to the guy who may have harmed me in a Washington hotel, let's not meet. Housemate actually is a violent psychopath. Bit of a long one, but here it goes. So about 6 years ago, me and my boyfriend lived in a shared house in the UK. It was three stories high. We were on the top floor in a double room with a sofa in the room and ensuite, and we also had a small area with a kettle or fridge or microwave so we could prepare snacks and small meals up there, and a Juliet balcony that overlooked the garden. The middle floor had one large and one medium room, and the bathroom. Downstairs was a large bedroom and toilet, and the communal kitchen with the washer and dryer, and a small patio garden. Generally, the people that lived there were younger professional people, say aged 20 to 30 years old, usually couples in the large rooms. Everyone there was friendly and laid back, some issues with it being a bit dirty, but we would all chat together and it was all reasonably cool. The landlady initially used a letting agent to advertise and manage the property, but then they said that they would start charging her the fees as opposed to the tenants. She was stingy, so decided to advertise it herself, I assume on sites like Craigslist or Spare Room. So when the smaller room on the middle floor became available, that was the first one she rented out without doing the proper background checks. The first dude she got was a laid-back quiet Jamaican guy. He was only there for about a month and skipped out without paying her rent. The second man she got to rent the room was in his 50s, bald, short and fat, and his name was Al. The landlady let us know that he was moving in via email, as she did with any new tenants. So he moved in one day when I was at work. I got home at about 7, and he was standing in the kitchen with all of the lights off. Bear in mind, this was England in the winter, and it was already dark. I almost shit myself when I walked in and he was just stood there. I introduced myself, and got an off vibe from him. His voice was completely monotone, and he did not blink once in the two-minute interaction, I kid you not. It unnerved me so much that I had a microwave meal instead of standing and cooking in the kitchen with him there. The next morning at about 5:30, me and my boyfriend were asleep in bed as were all other tenants, and we heard a blood-curdling scream, followed by cunts, you bastards have stole my sock. Then the sound of him stomping up and down the stairs, and a massive bang and a crash come from the kitchen. The banging and incoherent shouting and ranting continued for about 10 minutes, then he returned to his bedroom and the door clicked locked. When it was time for us all to get up, all of the other housemates, two other couples, were creeping around quietly, and we discovered that he had smashed the doors off all the kitchen cupboards. We called the landlady and told her what happened, and she said she would sort it out, and send the maintenance guy over to see the damage. We all then went off to work, and later that day we got an email from the landlady saying that he wasn't going to be living there anymore, and would be out by the end of the week. When talking to the other tenants in passing, we were all relieved that he was going. However, he did not leave. The dude didn't come out of his room for about 4 days apart from to use the bathroom, and to grab a few bits of food from the kitchen. I saw him when I was in the garden smoking a few times. The landlady then rescinded her last email, saying that he had nowhere else to go so would now be staying. Great. She also said that he was going to apologize, and that made it all better. He shuffled on up to all of our rooms, did a weird apology where he only looked at my feet, and again didn't blink at all. Over the next few months, Al was so creepy. He would corner you and always make really creepy remarks and jokes, and always would over-reveal weird things about him, randomly talking about his foot fetish and how he had never had a proper girlfriend to sexually explore with, and would come and sit with me and my boyfriend if we were sat together outside, sitting overly close. You would also hear him creeping around constantly. He would sneak up the stairs to our top floor, stand at the door then creep back down. If we would order takeaway, we would have to wait outside for it, as there were several occasions when he would take people's food, and it would be touched. The girl from the downstairs room next to the kitchen said that he would loudly masturbate in the downstairs toilet next to her room, and then leave jizz in the sink. However, he still refused to leave, and the landlady started the process for an eviction. Then came a day in April, when it was nice and sunny. Me and the boyfriend had both got the day off, and were watching TV with the balcony doors open. The neighbors were Polish family, and were doing some DIY in their house, I think making some shelves for a bedroom, as you could see them sawing in the garden, and hear some drilling and hammering in the house. This went on for about 30 minutes, and we could hear Al shouting downstairs in his bedroom, shut up, shut up, I'm trying to sleep, I hate you, and other general ramblings. We then heard his door slam, so I immediately got up to lock our door. Next thing you know, he was in the garden with one of my huge kitchen knives, trying to hack through the fence and screaming, you Polish CNTS, I'm going to slit your throats and make your kids watch I'm going to cut off your wife's head. I genuinely believed that he would stab these people if he could. I called the police while my boyfriend recorded him on the iPad. After about 2 minutes of this, he threw the knife on the floor and stormed into the house, and locked himself in his room. The police arrived about 5 minutes later, and the man from the couple downstairs let them in. They went up to his room, and arrested him, and he started screaming and raving that it was a conspiracy, that we were all out to get him and that he would kill us if he ever saw us again. He was remanded into custody for 8 months before his trial went to court, because apparently he constantly tried to attack the custody officer and shed everywhere. I found this out when I went to give evidence at his trial, but it didn't take place as his legal funding had been withdrawn. I'm so relieved that I didn't have to see him in the courtroom, and hope I never see him again. This happened to me while I was living in a university town. I had only a semester left while my friends had 2 semesters left in school. So I rented a room in house with 2 guys I found on Craigslist. I know that sounds creepy, but that's not the creepy part. I went for a run one morning, came back to my house, and hopped in the shower. With shampoo in my hair, I heard banging noises coming from the front door. I figured that my two roommates, who were friends with each other, had friends coming over and didn't think anything of it at first. I continued my shower, but the banging didn't stop. It continued to get louder. I started to hurry things along and started to become concerned. By the end of my shower, I heard a big crashing sound. Quickly toweling myself off to go investigate, the door to my bathroom opened. In the doorway was a man I had never seen before. He was looking my naked body up and down while I desperately covered myself up. I asked the only question that came to mind, "Who are you?" He didn't answer. He continued to look at me like I was a piece of meat. I asked the next most logical question, "Are you here by yourself?" Another man silently peeked his head from around the corner of the hallway. The first man told me to get on the ground. I said no, and he hit me open palmed in the face. He then said, "Bitch, do you want to die?" I had never been hit before. During the recoil, after his hand connected with my face, time had slowed down.
During that split second, I experienced the most intense fear in not knowing what to do next.
Not knowing what to do to safely get myself out of this situation. Where were my roommates? I was in this alone. I must act alone. My cell phone was in my bedroom. My only plan was to get out of the bathroom, to get my phone. I tried leaving the bathroom, and this is where my memory fades and has only been filled in with what others told me. My roommates were home. They came out of their rooms when they heard me screaming no, no, no. The first man had his arms around my waist from behind. When the man saw my roommates, he let go of me. The man demanded that my roommates give back his money. My roommates told the man, "We don't have your money." The two men left out the front door. This is where my memory begins again. I fell to the ground sobbing uncontrollably. My memory of this is actually from above, looking down at myself, like a bird's eye view. My face into floor, curled up like a bug. Once I regained control of my body, I went into my room and called my mom. I could barely get the story out to her by the time the police came. I had to throw on some clothes and talk to them outside. The banging and crashing noises were the two men kicking the original 1920s door in half to gain entry. It only took them a few minutes. I told the police what I remembered, which was minimal. They took DNA from face and fingerprints from my bathroom door. The police said they would do their best, but it was the 50th home invasion that day. It wasn't even noon. Now, 10 years later, this is still difficult for me to talk about. Memories of this day have come back to me like a bolt of lightning throughout the years. Some are still buried. For example, it took me 7 years to remember I went running that day, the reason I was in the shower to begin with. Not me, but my buddy was trying to sell a fish tank. Some guy called about it, and my buddy offered that the buyer can come take a look at it at his apartment, because he didn't feel like loading it up. The guy shows up, and it's a 65-plus-year-old man that seemingly doesn't take much interest in the actual fish tank, but rather kept making conversation about other stuff around my buddy's house, and eventually starts asking my buddy personal questions. Apparently he seemed like a weirdo but was nice enough. Eventually my friend asked him if he wanted the fish tank or not. He's gotta go because he has to go to work. The guy says he doesn't even want a fish tank, but instead was just looking for companionship in disguise of looking at items for sale. My buddy said he felt sorry for him, but basically told him, "Hey, sorry man, but that's not cool, blah blah blah, time to get the F out." Then the old man was like, "You gay, man?" My buddy says, "No, no, I'm not, WTF? The old man then says that he should open his mind a little and not be so uptight, and that he, the old man, used to be gay 20 years ago, but stopped when he found out he had HIV, but decided he wanted to get back into the gay stuff. By now my buddy was super uncomfortable and flat out told the guy to get the F out, now. Guy responds by saying, "Come on man, It's not transmitted if you use a condom. My buddy said, leave now or I'm calling the cops, and the guy finally walks out the door. As he's walking away, old guy is like, last chance man, you sure you don't want to at least try it? My buddy just slams the door shut. Guy leaves. That wasn't the end of it though. Guy kept calling my buddy, leaving weird messages, and even showed up at his house again a couple times while my buddy was at work, according to his neighbor. Finally, the old man stopped. I don't think my buddy ever called the cops, but was pretty creepy nonetheless.